This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. 9 o'clock hour every Thursday is reserved for the fellas from MGO Blog. We call it the MGO Blog Roundtable. My crew, guys from over at MGO Blog, started with the man, started it all over there. Brian Cook, BC, good morning. How are you?
I am well.
That is good. How about you, Seth?
Great. I'm on vacation here in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I understand what Craig's going through now when he has to do his like 3 a.m. shows in Hawaii because everyone gets mad at you if you get a cup of coffee at 5:25 a.m.
Yeah, that the coffee thing is legit. I mean, I haven't had any coffee. It's what, 3 a.m. here, and it's hard. That's a hard one.
So do you get back into bed, Craig, after the round table? You go back to sleep?
It's hard. I'll probably listen to the MGO Blog hockey cast with Alex and David, and maybe I'll fall asleep or maybe not. So I don't know.
All right. Well, look, time for some reflections before we look ahead to the Frozen Four, look ahead to the spring game. The end of basketball seasons just happened. Starting off first with the men's side of things, Brian, as the Wolverines fell in the Sweet 16 and felt like watching it, man, this is a winnable freaking game. It felt like, boy, I know it would have been a different matchup with Houston if Michigan had, they would have advanced, but still, you look at Villanova in the final, we're like, damn it, Michigan should have beat that team.
Yeah, I mean, it did feel a lot like the UCLA game last year where it was just like there were a bunch of shots at the rim and – I mean, Michigan shot 35% at the rim. I mean, 35% from two, under 50% at the rim against a team with no shot blocking, right? So it felt like in the first half, every time anything would go up, it would roll around, hit every part of the rim, come off, and then Villanova's similar shot would go down after hitting every part of the rim. And it was just like, what are you supposed to do? Like, yeah, Hunter Dickinson, hit the shots that you always hit. That's my coaching tip. Make shots.
But see, the thing is, and it, obviously most of the attention focuses on Hunter, but it was like everyone.
Yeah, it was everyone, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that they couldn't. I think the stat was 12 for 29 on layups and dunks. I just, dude, if they're just 60%, they're just 60%, they win this game.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I have no notes other than make shots. It's really hard to talk about a game like that sometimes because it's just like, well, you should have hit shots. Good job getting the shots.
Yeah,
taking the shots.
I mean, there are some positives about out of this game. I mean, one is that Michigan, I thought tactically, was very smart. They covered, I mean, Villanova, we're down in this game 47-39, and Villanova's 8 of 27 from 3 at that point. 8 of 27. And one of those is a banked in ridiculous lucky shot. And so Michigan really played, I think, Villanova right, covered the three, gave them crappy looks, and Villanova, you know, didn't make them. Meanwhile, Villanova, because they're small, decided to completely pack the paint. And Michigan had wide open looks that they were 6 of 18 on, which is probably about what they do on the season. But these are like shots that you would get in a game of horse. And, you know, the frustrating part, as Brian points out, I've seen three or four different numbers. Dylan Burkhart had UM Hoops had Michigan 13 of 37 at the rim. I saw 12 of 29. I think these were slight exaggerations. When I went back and looked through the game, it looked to me like some of these shots were contested. and were a little more difficult because Villanova, even though they were small, was packing it in the paint. Still, at least I have Michigan missing at least 13 or 14 shots at the rim that were nominally contested. And that's pathetic. Even worse than that, though, was the fact we were 3 of 10 from the free throw line early in a game where, you know, we're only down 54-50 as you got to the end, near the end of the game. So it was frustrating. Yet one other thing, for some reason, we had a terrible time with getting the ball into Musa in the paint. We had 5 turnovers on simple passes into the paint. Now, 2 were on Musa just dropping the ball, and 3 were just terrible passes. So that was a problem, too. Yet through all these problems, Michigan played good defense in this game, I thought. And it was really a game they certainly could have won this game.
Yeah, Seth, it was a defensive effort that was – this is the defensive effort that wins you this game. They couldn't compliment it. If there's a compliment, overall compliment for the effort, is this the best example of the year of their defense not being affected by their offense? But a team that good is well coached and is fundamentally sound is Villanova, that's just not going to be enough to beat them. So let's put the season in perspective. Seth, yeah. I mean, they made it to the second weekend. Where does that put your view of last season?
I thought it was interesting that on Torvik, if you look at the moving average of Michigan's game scores, this is only the 5th time all season that Michigan was within 5 points of their average game. So this was really an average Michigan game for the season. But like it didn't feel like it. Felt like, you know, okay, the shots didn't go in, and we can – that's kind of damaging our analysis of this game because – you know, people tune in and want to hear the good sports analysis, and the good sports analysis as well. We just make our shots at the rim. But, I mean, it was an average Michigan performance for the season because Michigan improved so much over the course of the season. And they also were just so up and down this year, right? It was very hard to find a game where Michigan was, like, the same team that they were on Tuesday, you know, on Saturday. It was just, like, it was such an up-and-down year. So, of course, they're going to die – you know, playing great defense and not making their shots. It was an encapsulation of how the season went. They were not great. They were well coached. They had some major flaws, and they improved over the course of the season. But that was, you know, they were not going to go fast at this point. And I thought Sweet 16 was a pretty nice ending to. It was nice to get that at least out of this season.
So we're looking ahead. We've had the discussion about who's going to go, who's going to stay before, and will NIL play a role in all of that. Right? We have obviously heard that Devontae Jones, you know, any notion that he might come back at age 24, he put that to rest in declaring. Wait and see on the other guys. At the same time, I've heard nothing yet to make me optimistic about Hunter and Musa. Optimistic about Caleb, but not optimistic about the other two. Granted, there is the possibilities are there. We'll see how things work out. But let's look at the portal for a minute. Not guys that necessarily that you know Michigan can get, but your portal wish list. Because I saw Adam Miller's name hit the portal, guys, and I was like, man, I know he's been on the show for a minute. But Big Ten experience, some shooting, I would love that. So that's a guy I look at, a wish list type. I was like, man, please, let's knock on that door. I'm curious if you guys have a guy or some guys on your portal wish list, starting with you, Brian.
Well, I mean, there's a couple who stand out, high major guys. Jalen Bridges from West Virginia, 6'7" wing, plays in a really high pressure defense, so probably has plus athleticism. Efficient offensive player, not high usage, but I don't think Michigan is really going to need a high usage. I mean, he looks like he could fit in the Shondy role. And then Shannon Terry, who just transferred from Texas Tech, starter for them, missed big chunks of the year with injury, but you know, another guy who plays in a really difficult defensive system. So you know, if you're looking for 3-and-D wings, that those are the two guys. And then there's just a slew of mid-major guys who look like they can shoot. So if you're going into this season thinking that Frankie's your starting point guard, then it's an absolute priority that your two guard is a knockdown three-point shooter. And there's a bunch of guys. There's always going to be guys shooting 38, 40% at a lower level. And this looks like the kind of team that could get someone like that a bunch of shots just because Frankie's going to be in the paint the whole time. So you need I think you need a two guard because, you know, other than Bufkin, you don't really have an option there because I don't think you can play Doug and Frankie together. So two guard, and then if you have an extra spot, then you look for Shaun D. Brown. The other thing that is a possibility is that both guys go and then you need a center, but I'm just going to say one of them comes back.
Craig, you got any wish list guys out there?
Well, people who aren't in the portal, I think I mentioned before, I think the perfect fit for Michigan is Cornack Ryan. And so they need to convince him somehow to come to graduate school here. But because he really would fit with this team. Now, Brian is absolutely right. They only have three guys in the backcourt right now next year. And two of them are very similar players, and one's a freshman. So you're going to have Frankie and Doug in the backcourt next year. And Doug may be a slightly better shooter, or hopefully somewhat better shooter. But Frankie, I think it was maybe it was Brian or Seth, or maybe someplace else I read it. But Frankie this year was a positive 10.4 points when he was on the court as a defender. So he made it. He became a very fine defensive player. In my opinion, was very good in the 1-5 ball screen because his feet are so quick. And he is a guy that maybe you're looking at maybe a little bit like X.
And that's exactly what Phil said. He said that the challenge to Frankie in the offseason is when you come back, you're Xavier Simpson on the defensive end. That needs to be you, and they're going to say that to him explicitly.
And I think he's shown some of that this year, and I think he has that ability, and he got better as the year went along. Problem is, Doug is strictly a point. You can't play him at the two. That's impossible. And so it's Kobe. Now, you and I, Sam, both love Kobe, and I thought he was going to break out, and I still think he may break out. And he did some things this year. I was surprised that he actually only had 39 fewer minutes than Frankie on the season.
I think his defensive I think he was a defensive liability at times, and it prevented him from getting the kind of minutes that where he could grow his offensive game enough. He was just
That's exactly it. So he needs to be in Camp Sanderson. He needs to get stronger. He needs to work on his defense. I still believe he will become a pretty good offensive player, at least. Uh-huh. I can't believe the guy I saw isn't gonna step up. But they still need, Brian's right, they still need a two. And they got to come up with someone, whether it's a mid-major guy or someone, they have to have a two. In terms of the centers, I just don't know. I mean, right now, you're still looking at maybe you got to ask Brandon Johns back next year. Depending on who goes. Yeah. I mean, hope that he looks like the Brandon Johns we thought we might get. They're looking at a guy from Utah Valley. Yeah. I didn't even know that was a school, I don't know. That could, I mean, it just depends. We just don't know at this point what Michigan's going to look like at center. But it can't be Terrace Reed and no one. Yeah. We know that.
Is Seth, you got any portal wish list guys?
I mean, I cut out for a little bit, but I'm positive Brian said find the most Chauncey Billups. Billups would be great too. Yeah, find the most Chandy Brown-shaped object in there and go after him. Center, you're going to have to figure out, right? Like, I would suck if we don't get one of those guys back. And then, you know, as far as Frankie, I think that when you look at his minutes versus Bufkin's not fair, because Frankie got most of his minutes at the end, right? He's the reason we actually got to the Sweet 16, because he stepped up for Colorado State, and then the Tennessee game was, I mean, his defense was a huge difference maker. It was the only guy who could stop those guards. So you have that core, and I think Kobe Bufkin probably has the athleticism. He just did not have the – he wasn't there defensively mentally yet. So I think there's a lot of upside there, and he could be your two guard, but certainly you can't guarantee that. So, I mean, you got to find that. You got to figure out what you got at center. Can we use Terrence Williams at center at all? Is that even plausible? I mean, so many teams do that nowadays, but it's such a departure from what we've been.
Well, it's interesting that you'd say that, because I think Terrence Williams actually tried to check Hunter in high school. In a couple of games.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I don't know how that went, but
no, that's. I mean, look, it would. I think that would be like a very team, not a plan that you would employ regularly. I think it would be very, very specific to a
right.
To
but if that team. That could become part of the rotation, if that becomes a weapon that they have. You might have to recreate center in the aggregate. If you don't have Moose and you don't have Hunter and you can't find someone like that in the portal, that's going to have that might end up being part of the mix.
Yeah, you're going to have to push. First of all, you can find someone in the portal. I don't think if both of those guys leave, I guarantee you they'll bring someone in. It's just, you know, what caliber will they be? Will be the question. I think they'll at least get some size. That they can throw out there, as opposed to having to resort to Terrence, unless they're in a circumstance or a situation where that wouldn't be just a total mismatch. But I definitely think that he physical enough to hold up. Sure, I wonder does that push Will Cheddar further up the rotation, further into the rotation. If you can't find anyone out there that's on, you know, what you think he could be for you, I think that would be something to watch. But I think they'll find someone in the portal if they can't get one of those guys back. Time will tell which way they have to go. But go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question for you guys. I mean, you mentioned Adam Miller, who was a player that I liked. I think he was a very highly regarded guy at the very least. And
he can shoot it.
He could shoot the ball, but can Michigan get him in? He's in the portal, but is that, he's not a grad transfer. And, you know, I wonder, I mean, this makes the problem even more difficult for Michigan, in that I don't know if he's even an option or he's not at the talking spot. And that would be true also for any big guy you're bringing in. And I don't know if the guy from Utah Valley is a grad transfer. If he is, fine. But if he isn't, I don't know what's going to happen there on admissions. And the other question I've got for you guys is, you know, Terrace Reed. Have you seen it? I haven't seen enough of him to really know how advanced he is or what, you know. It's hard for me to believe that he's a Big Ten ready guy. I mean, Hunter was last year, and he's rated about the same as Hunter. But I've also seen a lot of noise that the ratings are misleading and become more and more misleading because the quality of play has declined.
You saw that in reference to Terrace, or just that was a general comment?
No, general comment. I just don't know about Terrace. I mean, I don't have a firm feeling for him.
I mean, he's physically ready. Like, he's a big dude.
Okay.
He's not going to be an above the rim shot blocker kind of guy. He's definitely going to, but he's 6'10", 6'11", probably already 250.
Mm-hmm.
Has skill, has face up game, can operate in the post, but going to be a drop defender, not going to be switchable. Going to be a freshman who has some growing pains, but he's definitely a guy I would feel pretty comfortable playing for 15 minutes a game.
Okay.
It's just having him as your starting center and then having a questionable backup situation is difficult. Not something that teams can't overcome, but since Michigan relied so heavily on Hunter Dickinson this year, I think that would be a difficult situation to find yourself in. But yeah.
Remember, we also have Greg Glenn. Is that his name coming in? Again, I don't know much about him. I know he's 6'8", and I don't think he's a skinny 6'8".
He's a wing.
He's a wing. Okay.
Yeah, he's not a center in any way whatsoever, but he's also a guy who's going to be a project. So
that's my understanding.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect a whole lot from Glenn in year one.
He's more Jace Howard than Jet is. Like I would say he's more comparable to Jace's game than Jet would be.
And wow. I guess my other question is Jet a two? Can he handle the ball well enough to play?
No. You know, the question never be can he guard a two? Can he guard the quickest? The thing that I like about Jet, I mean, I was surprised how well he puts the ball on the deck at his size. I mean, he's a legit 6'7",
mm-hmm.
you know, 6'7", 205, 210 maybe. I mean, he's definitely more of a wing, but he is a wing that can put it on the deck and actually make plays for others on the or off the bounce. The thing that I wonder, because I haven't seen him, I didn't see him during the basketball season, is does he have a left hand? Because if Jet mm-hmm. Howard gets a left hand, I think Jet Howard goes from a guy who can be a pretty good, you know, pretty good college player to being a guy that, okay, now you're talking about a guy with first round pick type of potential. If he can go the other way, I don't know if he's advanced in that to this point, but I expect Jet to be an impact player coming in. Tell you what, I think he is a more refined offensive player than Caleb Houston. I know Caleb Houston was rated as a 5-star, but I don't think Caleb Houston puts it on the deck as well as Jet does. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I think that's accurate for anybody.
Caleb Houston could get to the rack. He just could not finish at all. And, I mean, you mentioned with Jet, like, people got to use the fact that he has no left. I've been talking about to Matt D, who does a lot of our basketball stuff, been talking to him about Jet a whole bunch lately. And I mean, Sam's right. Like, as soon as he's developing that, and you know that consider who his father is, and consider where he goes to school. He's at IMG, so like they're working on it, right? He's gotten a lot of professional level work on his game. And Houston, I know, you know, Montverde is going to be a good place to develop your skills as well, but he was really the fifth banana on that team. And, you know, he had a 50% three-point rate because that was his job. Everyone else is a superstar, and, you know, who are you going to sag off of? Well, might as well be that guy. I think Jet is a much better prospect at the three just coming out of high school than Houston was. But the problem is, he's not really a two. But that does kind of limit what you're going to do. But I think if you have Frankie, if you have Kobe come through with the two, and you have, you know, sometimes you're going to play a team that has a 6'7" shooting guard, and that'll be fine, right?
I don't think I can remember one in the Big Ten.
Maryland?
Or a bigger guy. Maybe not 6'7", yeah. But a bigger guy.
A guy who's not going to take you off the bounce every time. Not every shooting guard's a
sure,
guard.
But I mean, the solution at the two is to bank on Bufkin and then get any one of a dozen mid-major shooter guys Jared Lucas from Oregon State, who put up 39% both of the last 2 years and did nothing else other than shoot threes, which is fine.
It's weird that Michigan like can never get just a shooter. We've had every other kind of player, but like it's the most common player that you come across when we do the opponent previews, and Michigan just never has one.
Oh, I see. Zach Irvin.
Yeah, Duncan. Here lately. Yeah, Zach Duncan, Nick
Stauskas was not just a shooter.
Yeah. Well, when he was
canonically,
they sort of thought, man, is he gonna be able to get by guys at this level? Of course, he was able to, but they got him. They knew he was gonna be able to. That at least he was gonna be able to do. He was gonna be able to shoot the rock, and he was obviously much more than that. But
so yeah, I mean, I've just been poking around Bart Torvik's site for portal guys who could fit the two role, and there's like Antonio Reeves, 6'5 guy from Illinois State, Michael Jones, 6'5 from Davidson, 6'4 Cam Spencer from Loyola, 6' Mason Archibald from South Dakota, Jared Lucas, as I already mentioned. These guys are coming out the portal's ears. So Michigan, I predict, will get just a shooter in the portal.
Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side, and MGo Blog Roundtable crew is with us. And so, Frozen Four bound. But for that moment where you come out in the third period and Quinnipiac somehow find some optimism, which, Bryant, I swear, watching that game, I thought at the end of the second period when Michigan scores that shorthanded goal, I thought it was over because it seemed very clear that Quinnipiac thought it was over, and yet they had a salvo in the final period that made things a little interesting before Michigan slammed the door.
Yeah, I mean they they had a little bit of fortune to start that period that with a kind of a seeing eye goal that goes off a skate, but then they actually controlled a lot of the play in that third period, and everybody's talking about the decision to pull the goalie with about 4 minutes left, which I think is kind of an overblown talking point, just because the chances that you win in that situation when you pull the goalie and when you don't pull the goalie are pretty similar. But I feel like this sort of game Michigan had against a team like Quinnipiac was more their style. I mean, it was wide open in a way that you wouldn't expect from a Quinnipiac team that I think was giving up 1.1 goals a game. And that will not be the case in the Frozen Four, because the Frozen Four consists of the four highest scoring teams in America. So whatever concerns we had about running up against a Notre Dame and going down in the Notre Dame fashion are out the window. Now the concerns are Denver looks like they have just about as much talent as Michigan.
Yeah, there are years, man, where like the Frozen Four is like Air Force and Michigan State. Like there have been so many bad Frozen Fours.
Michigan State hasn't made the tournament since 2012. So,
yeah, but they won a national championship.
Yes, but that was a decade ago.
Okay, which I'm using as an example of the fact that, like, you know, hockey is plinko in the playoffs sometimes, and it's. But this year we've actually got, you know, four of the best teams in America in the Frozen Four. It's going to be, I mean, as far as just entertainment, these are going to be four great hockey teams. These are going to be great hockey games. Like. Unfortunately, this is you know, Michigan's year. Like, you want to have some of these Cinderellas in there to knock off, but these teams can all skate with Michigan. Denver's got as much talent as Michigan. It's going to be, you know, this is top level college hockey.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Quinnipiac game, it was a little distressing to me in that even in the first period when Michigan was up 2-0, felt like that was a pretty even 2-0. Now, Michigan could have scored more. They had odd man rushes. But it also felt like often Quinnipiac was carrying the play. And the second period turned around completely. Michigan dominated the second period. But then in the third period, it felt like once they scored the second goal, which was a very strange goal with Edwards just sort of losing a puck. I'm not sure what in the world happened there. It felt like Michigan got beaten up. It felt like Quinnipiac was just pounding them on the boards. And it made me wonder whether they can actually play with these defensive pairings, the defensive pairing of Blankenberg, who's a small guy, and Edwards, who's not a big guy. And they need to move Blankenberg back with power, I wonder. But who knows? In terms of Denver is a high scoring team. I think they scored a little more than Michigan did on the year. But Denver and Brian's right. They tend to mirror what Michigan looks like from a profile, but in their conference tournament, they lost 2-0 to Duluth. and they were 1-1 against UMass until late. And I think, I don't, was that an overtime game or, but that was a real even game against UMass. And I think it was a 2-1 final. So they haven't really in late in the season been generating as much. The difference I see between Denver and Michigan, I mean, they're both young teams. They're two of the younger teams in the country. And Denver's obviously has a lot of NHL guys or drafted guys, but I wonder about their goalkeeping. The guy has a 909, which isn't phenomenal, penalty kill is not. It's probably average or below average on the penalty kill, and I wonder if that's goalkeeping too. I haven't seen enough of Denver to really know, but if you take that, you take those things away, and it looks like the stats for Denver and Michigan are quite similar.
Do you guys think that call it scare that in the final period? Because you wonder with this team when they're clicking. They're just so much more talented. If they are on for the entire 60 minutes, they're going to win this thing. It feels like from the outside looking in, but clearly there was some taking foot off the gas pedal a little bit, maybe in that final period. Do you think it was a good thing that it got a little interesting late as they head into the Frozen Four?
Insofar, it might be a wake up call about that third pairing on defense, which Craig mentioned, did get run over, and then Edwards had the horrendous turnover and then a really bad mistake on the third goal where he is checking a guy in the goal mouth and he leaves that guy to go contest a wraparound, which is not a dangerous situation. So if that causes you go back to the Blankenberg pairing with Power on the top line and the third pair is a little marginalized, I think that's a useful lesson for going up against some really good teams. I don't think that Michigan's going to be in a position where they're up 4-0 on Denver. That'd be real nice.
Yeah, so, it's funny. Spass said, hey, they actually need closer games. They actually need closer games. Big leads are bad for them.
I don't agree with that. I think scoring lots of goals is good. There's that adage that the worst lead in hockey is 2 goals, which is wrong because then they score a goal and you're still up a goal. Right? Like, I know that's the thing that coaches say to players because they don't want them to take their foot off the gas, but we're not coaches, so we don't have to like pretend that that's accurate. If they're up 4-0 on Denver, I will be happy. I think that this is going to be a game of staying out of the box because both teams have lethal power plays and not giving the opposition odd man rushes. So Michigan has been much better about that, but they are still very aggressive with their defense pairings, and I think they're going to continue that. And Michigan rotating back with their fours is going to be really important.
Gotcha. I don't know how much the defensive pairing. The third defensive pairing being a little small is like a very low level difficult problem, and it came out against Quinnipiac because they're a big team. But like, I love that Pearson plays with Power because that lets Power go and be Power.
I don't know. It's just a thought and not unique to me. I've heard it expressed by two or three other commentators saying, well, maybe this pairing isn't the greatest pairing because they're just a little small.
You're compromising how good your first pairing is because Pearson is not the same level as Blankenberg.
Right.
And even if one of those guys has to stay back, that's fine. I want the first pairing to have the two of the best puck movers on the team. Luke Hughes is kind of a thing. But, I feel like if you're going best versus best, I don't want Pearson near that matchup. So I would rather have the ability to get the puck out of the zone, break out effectively, and go play. And also those guys have so much familiarity with each other that I feel like that's probably the better option. Now, probably a minor thing all said, but yeah. I mean, the thing about Denver's goalie is a good point, because Michigan has exposed Portillo to so many bad situations because they're so aggressive, and Denver plays the same way. And I think you see the value in Portillo because he's got like a 930 versus this guy's 910. And if he gives up a questionable goal, it's going to be hard for Denver to keep up, I think.
You know, I don't think it's been said enough this year. Maybe it has. I don't know. But Portillo's really been good. I mean, he was even, I thought, pretty good in this game where they gave up four goals.
He was the reason that it was 4-0 and not 4-4 in that game. I mean, I know Michigan missed a couple, you know, had a couple shots against the
4-2.
4-2, yeah. But I mean, he made some big saves along that in that game, and I thought that he was. I actually put out a tweet about how like Portillo was the goalie who's just stealing one of these games, and then the whole third period happened. But I think we're just overrating how fluky some of those goals were. I thought like when Edwards fell down, people were falling down all weekend. This the Allentown ice is notorious, right? So I mean, they could have just been I don't know if it was, but I think it very well could have just been a moment of bad ice and a little bad luck. And okay, there's, you know, two of your goals right there. I thought Portillo was a major reason that they got this far, and a major reason that they had that 4-goal lead when they needed it against Quinnipiac.
Mm-hmm. Want to get a little football in before we get out of here. Spring game coming up this weekend, of course. Curious what you'll be looking for, each of you, in this game. And do you buy, because the big news is Colin Kaepernick, honorary captain, do you buy the talk from folks who are saying, I'm done with Michigan football, I'm going to turn in my season tickets? Do you think that'll really be that the impact of his honorary captaincy in a spring game is going to impact season ticket sales or returns?
Bro, if you're still here after the Dave Brandon years, nothing is getting you out. Come on, man. That's not you.
No, the people, Brian. No. The people who really love Dave Brandon probably hate Colin Kaepernick.
Well,
I don't know.
If you endured Dave Brandon getting fired by a blogger, then you're not getting, gonna get your knickers in a twist about Colin Kaepernick, not long term, because you know sports fans are sports fans, and they got to come back.
I mean, I can't imagine it's going to have any impact at all. I mean, I would be surprised, stunned, if it impacted more than one person.
You're going to change the programs to issues of Jacobin.
I think it'd be like the NFL if it came.
Yeah, the NFL is hurting really bad from this, aren't they? Like,
right? Yeah, I mean, right,
look what happened to the NFL. Nobody watches the NFL anymore.
Right, yeah, some people did turn in their tickets, or they didn't get their, they didn't go to games anymore, and then there were people there to gobble them up. If it came to that here, which I don't think it will, but if it did, I think there would be a ton of people ready to go pick those season tickets up. So,
well, I don't know about that, because as we've discussed before, the product now is pretty bad. So one of the things that was a shock about going to a hockey game is there's one minute ad break per period. And
yeah,
it was just like, oh, I don't have to like look at my phone for a half hour every quarter. And also it doesn't work. So yeah, I think filling Michigan Stadium is going to be a chore, even coming off a season where you won the Big Ten, especially because the non-conference schedule is dismal. There's nothing there. So
yeah, I mean, that could not be more correct. I mean, the reality is that going to a football game means you're going to, especially if it's on Fox, but you know, means you're going to sit there for 40 minutes, 50 minutes or longer, maybe an hour of just dead time.
So that's not a Michigan thing. Then that's just going to games, then, period. Then,
no,
right?
But like Michigan has a real big stadium.
Michigan has a really big stadium, and it isn't just a problem at Michigan. if you look at games, another, you know, they're having the same issues. So, I mean, the problem is that to get people to go to games, it has to be an experience that's worthwhile. Otherwise, they'll sit at home, you know, drink their Budweiser in front of their big screen TV, and they'll be happy. And you've got to give them a reason to go to the games. And the experience is sometimes just excruciating. And hockey has figured that out. I mean, hockey cut down the breaks between periods, I think, a couple of minutes.
Honestly, hockey goes too fast now.
Yeah, maybe that's true, right. But hockey is a, you know, is a reasonably expeditious event and a non-painful event for the fans, whereas football can be a painful event. In terms of Kaepernick himself, I think it's a brilliant move by the Michigan football program. I think the Michigan football program in the Harbaugh years has done a lot of really smart things on this front. The only one that drives me crazy is why Harbaugh was playing around with the dumbass Vikings. And that one is completely mysterious. But outside of that, I mean, I think from the satellite camps to everything else have been pretty damn smart. And this one seems smart to me, too, because young kids, particularly minorities, may have, you know, say, hey, yeah, we like Colin Kaepernick. We like that he showed courage. We like that he stood up for what he believed and exercised his First Amendment rights. I mean, it seems to me that is a more likely and a more valuable commodity than I don't like this. I'm canceling my Michigan tickets. Well, fine. Cancel your Michigan tickets.
It's not just like this is not like Dave Brandon bringing in Eminem who, like, you know, gets on the big screen and is like, what am I doing here? Right? This is this is a real connection that, and this is something that we've asked, you know, when we got Harbaugh, we said, this is somebody who should make it, who should trumpet the fact that he is, friends with, you know, like Colin Kaepernick's his guy. He's the one who drafted him. He was, you know, he's the one who openly supported him. And Craig, calling back to something you said on WTKA before I even joined the show, which is universities should wear their hearts on their sleeves. You know, we're a state institution that has a lot more meaning than just the football, basketball, and hockey teams, right? You're trying to say something with your university. You're trying to, you know, you're not just educating the people there. This is a state institution. This is the University of Michigan. And, he's a symbol. You bring him in, that's a symbol.
He is, the problem that you run into is the messaging or the purpose or the cause and the perception of it for some anyway are two different things. Like, why was he protesting? And I agree with you 100%. The reason for his protest is something that should be emblazoned on the sleeves, but no matter how much he says it or it's said for him, the reason for the protest and the perception of it continue to be conflicting things in the eyes of some people. And no amount of talk, no amount of examples of the necessity of that protest, it doesn't change the view. So I think it was, you know, I got to give Jim some credit, to do that despite the pushback that you know is going to be there. Because I think for him, you're looking first at your team. And this is a popular thing with the team. Gotta believe it's gonna be popular with the recruits that come to town as well. So if his presence is so abhorrent to some folks that they're gonna not attend the spring game, it's such a put off. If you need another way to look at it and you want to be more trivial about it, your team loves it, could help with recruiting. I mean, totally trivial and totally self-serving. Not the reason to look at it, but there you go.
I've done a lot of Michigan history. They said the same things when George Jewett joined the team. Yeah. All right. This is not a new thing for fans to say, okay, I'm done. But you know what happens? The people who are influenced by the people who see, okay, Michigan is going to stand up and be for something, that's going to resonate with recruits. That's going to resonate with the players. And because you get a better quality of player, because you get a because people believe in the thing a little bit more, that is going to lead to a little bit more success for the program, and that is going to matter more even to the whiners than one guy who kneeled one time. It's they're going to make noise because that's what they do. That's what that's about, right? The whining is there for the whining. But you look at the entire history of Michigan football, every time they took a step forward, it was a benefit for the program from a football standpoint as well.
Oh, yeah. Hey, man, certainly trying to get those who are, like I said, so put off by it. Like if you need to reduce it to something trivial and something that is about you, then there you go. It can help. I'm talking about you in a sports sense. Then there you go. It can certainly be helpful in that way when this is obviously a much bigger thing than Michigan football, right? But anyway, I got to get this question in because it just came in. $42 million for new scoreboards. What do you guys think? Inevitability of ads. What do you make? I mean, I just it did seem like these scoreboards they became sort of out of date rather quickly, but I think increasing the fan experience, what we were just talking about, I think more bigger screens that span sort of a much wider swath of the end zones, a more interactive experience, so to speak, on the scoreboards, I think that's part of enhancing the fan experience that we were just talking about.
I suppose, but if you're spending $41 million on scoreboards, why don't you spend $41 million on Wi-Fi? Like, I would rather be able to check Twitter than have a slightly better replay experience, which the current experience is fine. And I don't know what the point really is of bigger scoreboards when I can't communicate with anyone during the million commercial breaks.
The problem is, I actually discussed this with somebody who, because I'm like, what is going on here? Why are we going to spend $42 million? Why don't we just create a women's hockey team for $42 million, yes, right? Like, there's a lot of things that we could do with $42 million. The problem is the idiot who built the last scoreboards, who has already been mentioned on this podcast, fell for some technology that is no longer used. So they can't replace the parts unless they prefabricate them themselves. So you're going to look at spending $42 million anyway down the pipeline, or replace the scoreboards and then have it. That's what they're really looking at. The problem is when you say there's a $42 million outlay right after a pandemic, right after like a lot of other sports could, you know, 500,000 could really make a difference with some of the other sports on this campus. It looks stupid, but the honest truth is Dave Brandon messed up the original scoreboards that they put in there by contracting a company that was his friends, and they're no longer in business and you can't get the parts anymore.
Yeah. This is a ticket survey. They got asked about the feelings about ads in the stadium and on the scoreboard. This would seem to be, you know, sort of the grooming for that. All right. For that ultimately happening. You guys think it's inevitable, like one of the other messengers said?
The grooming for this was all of the ads for all the other sports.
No, I
mean,
we've
been bombarded by those so much now. It's like, what's going to be the difference if it changes to be an Allstate ad or something?
Get rid of the scoreboard. Save the $42 million. I mean, no, I'm serious. There used to be no scoreboard there. You had the time down and distance. That's all I need. Get rid of the damn scoreboard. Shuffle the $42 million into some fake NIL fund. Get Hunter Dickinson back next year. That's, you know, and start a women's hockey team. That would be a lot better than the damn scoreboard, which is pointless in the first place. And forget about Wi-Fi too, because that's greedy by me, because I don't care about Twitter or being on phone.
Look, if I'm going to be sitting there with nothing to do for an hour and a half during a 3-hour game, then I would
bring
like to
a
be
book
able to
like I do.
I'm not
ready. All right, guys, that'll do it for us today. When we come back next week, spring game reflections, more hockey talk, a lot to get into at that time. So